All right. Genesis 39. Looks like we have a pretty good crowd tonight for Wednesday night. Remember, I'm sure it'll be announced later, but we will be having class tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock. And so we hope we can. We were having real good classes before the virus hit and all of that. And so hopefully we can pick up where we left off. The attendance was good, and so hopefully we can have good attendance tomorrow. All right, Genesis chapter 39, and we left off with Joseph, and we were talking, of course, you remember, Joseph, we are told that he was like his mother. He followed his mother in that he was handsome. Of course, Rachel, it says in Genesis 29, I think it is about verse 17, that she was beautiful in form and appearance, and such was the case with Joseph. It says here that he was handsome in form and appearance. And so we were emphasizing that now he is in a relative position of power. It's not great power. He is not military or anything like that, but he has been risen to being over Potiphar's house, and everything is given to his charge. And so it is a pretty important position now. And we don't know. I wish we knew how long everything broke down, but we don't. This is kind of a little reprieve for him. What we'll find is that the time that he's in Egypt and then ends up being exalted is 13 years. And so they were 13 hard years other than this period of time right here. He's still a servant. And so it probably wasn't the best situation. It wasn't like being back home, that's for sure. But being exalted to the position that he gets exalted to was a good thing. But anyway, as we continue to look at him, he now is in Potiphar's house, and things are going well for him. The Lord is with him because he doesn't lose his faith. And so we've talked about all of that and how important that is and how you respond to hard times and difficult situations. But now he is about to be tempted. And this is a familiar biblical story, of course, but it is one that's very practical to us because temptation is real. And we understand that we're all tempted from time to time. Like, it doesn't matter who you are. There's all kind of different temptations, and a lot of times when we think of temptation, certainly when we think of Joseph, it is of a sexual nature, but there are many different kinds of temptation. And whoever you are, it doesn't matter. At some point in time, you experience temptation. And it doesn't matter how good you are, how religious you might be. It doesn't matter if you cleave to what's good and abhor what is evil. It doesn't matter if you're a beginning babe in Christ or a seasoned saint. None of that matters. You're going to be tempted in some area at some point. You might be tempted to lie. You might be tempted to forsake the assembly. You might be tempted by material things. There's just all kinds of temptation. The list goes on and on. And that's because we know the devil is real. And you remember, of course, we're all familiar with what Peter says in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 8. Of course, Peter reminds us, be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. And so you can be sober-minded, he says. We have to be of our right mind, have good judgment, have temperance and self-control, and be watchful because the devil is constantly on the prowl. And so man is tempted. It has always been the case. The devil doesn't rest. And so because of that, we we can, lessons like this that we learn from Joseph is good. And we have to be particularly careful with regard to Satan. And of course, now when we start looking at his temptation, it is, his is sexual in nature. And that's the oldest, of course, the temptation that probably plagues man the most. And it's just amazing how much trouble people get into and their lives are ruined because of sexual temptations and giving in to them. Think about all the broken homes that have come about. I'm just amazed sometimes at how people, sometimes important people and powerful people, will give in to sexual temptation of one kind or another. And you think, really? You don't know? I mean, it causes people to lose their mind when you stop and think about it. You know, people who are very, how many senators or politicians who are just really have a good life going on, and they throw it all away because of some sexual temptation they give into. And how do they always get caught? They send a text to somebody. Like, how dumb are you? Like, everybody knows you're going to, once you send that text, you're probably going to get discovered. But people lose their mind. They just don't think. Smart people just don't think. Preachers, I hear from time to time, it's not rare really to hear of a preacher who gives in to some kind of temptation. And it's sometimes shocking, really, when I hear who it is. And you're taken by surprise, but it's a very real thing. We live, of course, I've talked before about the sexual revolution of the 60s and how that really changed the country, probably the world, forever. And it was triggered by feminism. It was triggered by the invention of what they call the pill. And now all of a sudden, women could be just as sexually free, immoral, really, as their counterpart, as men. It's a shameful situation that men have always gotten away with sexual sins. And, you know, I think we all understand there's always been a double standard when it comes to men and women and things that men are looked up by a lot of people. Women are despised and looked down upon. But, you know, when all of that came about in the 60s and the years following that, all of a sudden there's that revolution and freedom. And women didn't have to worry about unwanted pregnancies and didn't have to worry about having to get, at the time, an illegal abortion. And, you know, all of those things just kind of went away, or at least the danger of them lessened greatly. And minds started to open up and people started to think more freely about sexual relations, and it led to where we are now. Just a mess. To where now homosexuality even is a very common, open thing. And so it just goes to show you that it's a powerful temptation, and we're not immune to it. If any local congregation of any size that's been around for any period of time at all has experienced membership getting involved, whether it's unscriptural divorce, whether it's affairs by husbands or wives, whether it's teenage pregnancy or whatever. All sexual sins have plagued almost every congregation. Again, I don't know of a congregation that has been around for any period of time that hasn't had to deal with that in one form or another. It's not just the world. It's Christians. So anything we can learn to combat temptation of any kind, as I said in the beginning, doesn't have to be sexual, but just temptation, any kind of temptation, we're better off for it. And if you want a good example of someone who knew how to handle temptation, I don't know if there's a better example other than Christ himself, of course, in Matthew chapter 4. But outside of Christ, I don't know if we have a better example than Joseph. And so, as we look at Genesis 39 then, It says, and again, it talks about him being handsome in form, in appearance. And then in verse 7 it says, and after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph and said, lie with me. And so a frontal attack, just no beating around the bush at all. Just and think about, again, I remember, this just shows the great character of Joseph. Because how many men would give in to that kind of temptation? A woman, the Potiphar's wife, probably, we don't know, and there's no description of her, but Egyptian women were known to be beautiful, biblical times and even and then after, but particularly when they're married to a powerful person like Potiphar. And I think we're probably not going out too far on a limb, though, you know, we couldn't be sure, again, as I said, but not going out too far on a limb to say that she was probably a beautiful woman. And approaches Joseph and says, lie with me. How many men would give in to that? She was being married to Potiphar. She had some clout herself. And so, I mean, you'd want to talk about a temptation to have to overcome. A young man, handsome. As I said, I think last week, at that age where the sexual desires are at its strongest, and a woman, perhaps a beautiful woman even, lie with me. And what does he do? Well, if you continue to read here, it says, she says again, lie with me. But he refused and said to his master's wife, behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in the house. And he has put everything that he has in my charge. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And as she spoke to Joseph, day after day, he would not listen to her to lie beside her or to be with her. And so a great example of how to overcome temptation. Let's take a look a little bit. How to fight temptation. Just a few simple things tonight. Practical things, because this is a very serious issue. Whatever kind of temptation that you're dealing with. First of all, we need to be dogmatic. Did Joseph beat around the bush? Did Potiphar's wife know where he stood? He refused. Yes, he refused to do it. The best way you can overcome temptation is with an emphatic no. Don't think of it. There's no indication at all that Joseph ever even thought about giving in to this temptation. He refused right from the beginning. And that's the best way to fight temptation. When you begin to waver a little bit, then you can be in some trouble. And so you have to be like Joseph, just refuse. And clearly, this is something Joseph, he no doubt made up in his mind beforehand. Not with regard to this. He didn't know this was coming. This, there's no way he could predict that this was going to happen. But obviously, he had made up in his mind that he was going to please God no matter what. That was more important to him than anything. And so, you know, if something did come along, he was ready for it. He just right away refused. In fact, when you look down a little bit further, down at verse 10, it says, and as she spoke to Joseph day after day, he would not listen to her. Like he wouldn't even listen to her. Like it was no right from the start. And that's how, again, when you begin to waver and you don't do that, you open that door, you can be in trouble. I remember, this is not the same thing at all, but just so far as saying no. A couple of years ago, I had got a call, and some of you may know, I got a call from the brother at Laurel Canyon, when Jason was leaving, and wanted me to come and work there. And the elder I know him well, and he's the son-in-law of Gordon Price. I don't know if he's known in this area, but he passed away now. But anyway, so I can remember having the conversation with him and telling him, you know, I'm really not interested in moving, really. Happy where I am. But you know what I didn't do? What do you think I didn't do just because of this conversation? I didn't say no. Yeah, I thought, well, you know, I'll talk it over with Janice, see what she says about it. Laura Canyon, many of you have been there, attractive congregation, whatever. Yeah. But I didn't say no right from the start. So that got me into a little bit of trouble, not a whole lot of trouble. But so I go and hold a meeting for him. And on Monday night, I preach and I'm in the back and they're doing announcements like they always do, just like we do. And next thing I know, the fella's saying, now, on Wednesday, Don's going to answer some questions after he preaches. I'm like, really? What am I going to do that for? And you know, well, that's not that unusual. I've done that before. I don't know if you all have ever done that before, but sometimes congregations will want me after I preach to, you know, field questions. But generally, you're told that. You have some, you know, they let you know that they at least ask you, are you okay with that? You want to do that? But they didn't ask me anything. I'm just hearing this fellow say, yeah, Don's going to answer some questions. And I'm kind of slow, you know, so it takes me a minute. But then after I think about that, I'm thinking, they believe I'm interested in moving here. And so that's what they wanted to drill me personally. And because, you know, they asked me some questions about, you know, about whatever, I don't know, just to see if whether or not they wanted me to come. And so I had to quickly call, you know, tell the elders after we got to meet and let them know I'm not interested in moving at this time at all. But why did I get myself into that? How could I have avoided that situation? It was kind of uncomfortable, to be honest with you. I wasn't interested in moving. But here's a correlation. Here's the thing with temptation. Again, that's something totally different, except I should have just said no. Why do you think one reason I didn't? Huh? Didn't want to hurt their feelings? No, that wasn't so mean. I don't care about that. No, I do care about that. I do care about that. But no, that's good. But I didn't. That wasn't it. I'll tell you what it was. It was kind of flattering. You know, makes you feel good. Whenever, and I get calls from time to time for people that the preacher is leaving, and I'll get a call. And it's flattering. And that's a whole different thing. But think about Joseph. Wouldn't that be a little addition to the sexual side of it? That this woman, if she was a beautiful woman, and again, a woman of clout, married to Potiphar, and she's interested in him. That'd be flattering. In fact, look over in Proverbs chapter 7. You're familiar with this. This is the passage in Proverbs that preachers use all the time to deal with sexual temptation and things. But Proverbs 7 and at verse 6. It says, for at the window of my house I have looked out through my lattice and I've seen among the simple. I have perceived among the youths a young man lacking sense, passing along the street to near her corner, taking the road to her house. In the twilight in the evening, at the time of the night and darkness, and behold, the woman meets him, dressed as a prostitute, wily of heart. She is loud and wayward. Her feet does not stay at home, now in the street, now in the market, and at every corner she lies in wait. She seizes him and kisses him, and with a bold face she says to him, I had to offer sacrifices, and today I have paid my vows. So now I have come out to meet you. And that's what I wanted to get to right there. You notice that? I have come out to meet you. No, you didn't. You came out to meet anybody. Whoever. She just wanted somebody. But this is flattering to him. I've come out to meet you, to seek you eagerly. And I have found you. No, you just found somebody. But wouldn't that make him feel good? I've been looking for you. I've come out to meet you. That just adds, because there's pride involved. And I'm convinced that a lot of times when people give in to temptation of a sexual nature, whether it happens to be something that takes place on the job, or a lot of that, it falls into that category. And that was something that Joseph was hit with. Unless your mind's already made up, I'm not interested in that at all. To Joseph, it wouldn't be a compliment. He wouldn't be flattered by it. He would be put off by it. Because he has already determined that there's nothing more important than pleasing God. And so when she approaches him, it's not something that he's going to feel flattered by. And that's what but again, he doesn't beat around the bush. He just right away, he refuses. No. And so being dogmatic, that's what we need. That's a good way. And that's true with any kind of temptation. You just put a stop to it right away. Just say no. And we need to refuse to be disloyal. And you see that in his words, don't you? As he responds. He, again, verse 9, he's talking about his position. He is not greater in this house that I am, nor did he keep back anything from me except you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness to sin against God? He wasn't going to be disloyal. That really aids with temptation. When you feel that sense of loyalty, particularly to God, and especially to God, I am not going to sin against God. Would he be sinning against Potiphar if he did this thing? Absolutely. And he knew that. But he knew the far more important thing is he would have been disappointing God. He would have been disloyal to his God. And so he talks about sinning against God. And it's important. Every time you're tempted with any kind of sin, you need to have that placed in your mind squarely, that if you do whatever the temptation is, whatever it is, you are sinning against God. Oh, the elders won't find out. Well, forget about the elders. You're sinning against God. Oh, the brethren, they'll never know better. Yeah, but you're sinning against God. And he knows everything. He sees everything. And Joseph knew right away that this would be, if Potiphar never discovered the transgression, God would. He obviously would know it immediately. And how can I do that? How can I do that? And we should have that same mentality. How can I do this to God? How can I do this to Jesus? Think of all that Jesus has done for you. He's done more than a little bit for all of us. Think of what he sacrificed. Think of the suffering he endured just so that you can go to heaven. We all should have that attitude. How can I do this to him? You think that won't put a stop to a temptation? If you can think about that again, it is important that you make up in your mind even before you find yourself in some kind of temptation. When it does come, you can combat it because you've already determined, no, I'm going to be ready for it. I'm not going to give in. But don't you think it would help a little bit if you understand I'm going to be disloyal to God? In fact, there's a passage in Hebrews. Turn over to Hebrews chapter 6. This is really an amazing statement. You've read it before, I'm sure, but Hebrews chapter 6, listen to what the Hebrews writer says about sin and falling away and all of that. Hebrews 6. He says at verse 6, and then verse 4, for it is impossible in the case of those who have once been enlightened and who have tasted the heavenly gift and have shared in the Holy Spirit and have tasted the goodness of the Word of God and the powers of the age to come. These are all blessings that we have that would add to that question. How can I do this to God after all of this? We have all of these things that he just enumerated right here. But anyway, he says, in the powers of the age to come, and then have fallen away, to restore them again to repentance, since they have crucified once again the Son of God to their own harm, and holding him up to contempt. But the King James says puts him to open shame. And crucifying the Son of God afresh. Now you think about that. Whenever you're thinking about sinning, this is what you're doing. Whenever you decide you're going to take that path and you're going to engage in premarital sex or have an extramarital affair, whatever it is, you're going to be crucifying Jesus afresh. That's a terrible thing to think about. You're going to be causing that much harm and pain to deity. I think we ought to stop and give that some consideration. Joseph, right away, that was his response. How can I sin against God? I won't do it. I'm not going to do it. And so he wasn't going to be disloyal. We need to be able to discern. How did he refer to this? What did he call it? It was sin against God. He referred to it as wickedness, didn't he? Can I do this wickedness? And, you know, I tell you, one important thing when you talk about temptation, giving in to sin, the devil doesn't want you to think sin is sin. Like, it's amazing how we can, some people can justify doing certain things just by saying, well, you know, it's not really that bad. Not all that bad. And a lot of people do it anyway. So it's not that bad. You want to overcome Satan and sin and temptation, you have to be able to discern what sin is. And you have to recognize it as it is. Sin is always wickedness. There are passages, you remember in Philippians chapter 1. Turn over there with me for a minute. Philippians, the first chapter. I like what Paul says here. Philippians chapter 1. Hope I can find this because I don't have my buddy Rick here tonight. Philippians 1 and at verse 9. He says, and it is my prayer that your love may abound more and more with knowledge and all discernment, so that you may know, so that you may approve what is excellent, and so be pure and blameless for the day of Christ. Notice that, have more knowledge. He wanted them to have love, but he wanted them to have a knowledgeable love with all discernment, that you may approve what is excellent. All of us should approve of what is excellent. And the counterpart to that, then, is that we hate evil, sin, and we recognize it for what it is. We have that discerning power. Look at Hebrews chapter 5. Remember when the Hebrews writer is talking about these brethren being babes when they shouldn't have been. Hebrews 5 at verse 12, for though by this time you ought to be teachers, You need someone to teach you again the basic principles of the oracles of God. You need milk, not solid food. For everyone who lives on milk is unskillful in the word of righteousness since he is a child. But solid food is for the mature, which is what we should all strive to be. Solid food is for the mature, for those who have their powers of discernment trained by constant practice to distinguish good from evil. Can you do that? Can you distinguish good from evil? How are you going to overcome temptation if whatever it is you're being tempted with by the devil, you don't even think it's that bad anyway? Think how delighted the devil is when he tries to tempt you with something and you act like, well, you know, it's not really that bad. He's thinking, great, I don't have to work at this at all. But Joseph, right away, he knew this would be wicked. This would be wicked. Oh, of course it would. That's adultery. How many people do you think in the world today who don't think adultery is a big deal? How many people wouldn't call fornication wickedness today? Most of the world. Most of the world. Remember what I said in the very beginning. We're not immune to this. This infiltrates local churches of Christ more than you would like to know. And I may have told you, I remember years ago when I held a meeting at Bedford. I can't remember if I was at Thayer Street at the time or not, or had moved by then, but I held a meeting at Bedford. You remember Harry Rice? Oh, Harry Rice. Janice was with me. We had dinner at their house, and he was talking about all of the sexual sins that are committed by preachers at the Brotherhood, including homosexuality. And Harry wasn't one to, I mean, he wasn't a gossip or anything like that. In fact, he wouldn't tell me. He said, I could tell you name people, preachers I know you know. But he wouldn't. And it's just amazing. I've heard some brethren since then, myself, and it's just amazing. We're not immune to this kind of thing. And once you get to think, but you know, it's not that bad. It's really not that bad. I've told you before that this is just the fact that in Baptist churches, they feel like the preacher has a right to single women in the congregation. I'm not running down the Baptist church. I've been told by Baptists that they have a right. And now how in the world do you get to that point? How can you get up and preach and think like that? Pretty easy when you convince yourself it's not that bad. Everyone's doing it, and so it's just a part of being a so-called pastor or whatever. No discerning power at all. One thing Joseph had right away is discernment. He knew right away, I can't do this wickedness. Because that's what it is. It's wickedness. And we need to view all kind of sin, every kind of sin, just like that. And then, of course, we know that there's the need to depart, the willingness to depart. And that's ultimately, we know that that's what Joseph had to do. So, in verse 11, it says, but one day when he went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was there in the house, she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. But he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out of the house. And as I read that, I thought about something else. Go back up to verse 10. This is how, you know, temptation, the devil, he's just tricky. And his agents are too when they're trying to get something. So watch this at verse 10. And as she spoke to Joseph day after day, again he said he wouldn't listen to her to lie beside her or to be with her. You ever catch that? Think about that. Go back a little bit further. Behold, she says, lie with me. I was trying to see if she actually said that in quotes. But he refused to lie beside her or to be with her. So that implied, what was she, can you imagine, what did you think she said to him? Right. He refused to lie with her or be with her. You can just see her now. Come on, just lie down next to me. You'll be all right. Like, really? You can see men saying, all right, no harm. I'll just lie with you. I'll just lie there. You're in trouble. You're in trouble. But that's sin. That's the trickery of the devil. And Joseph refused to do that. That's why I said earlier, there's no hint at all. He didn't even consider this thing. He wasn't going to give in. He wasn't listening to her. He just said no. He refused. Oh, come on, just lie. We're not going to do it. Just lie with me. Nope. That's in trouble. That's trouble. Yeah, go ahead. Autumn. Right. 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 But that's a great point. In fact, it would probably be a sermon on a lot. That's just the nature of sin. You feel so guilty afterwards that it overwhelms you sometimes. And there's been not a few who that just gets them to spiral down. And that's, you know, that's the problem with drinking and all kind of different sins. That is why you say you take that one drink and it just, especially if you're trying to fight against it. Because then you get in and you feel disgusted about yourself, you disappoint yourself, that's why we always say don't wallow in your sin. If you sin, you know, we all sin from time to time, repent of it quickly and ask God for forgiveness. Because you can fall so deep, be hard to recover. So, yeah. Yeah. There's a stark contrast with Joseph and with most, really. But he did the right thing at the end. We'll look at some passages next week. Sometimes you just have to depart. Now, with Joseph, he literally departed. But sometimes departing has to do with getting yourself out of the situation. Or not even putting yourself in the situation. But Joseph literally took off. And we'll look at that just a little bit next week before we go on to the next section.